Hello everyone, this is Tony, and I'm afraid I have come down with an illness. Don't worry, it's not cancer. And unfortunately that just means we can't record tonight, so I have let William know. And instead, here is one of those weird other-dimensional mystery episodes for you. So enjoy that. Alright.
In a world completely overrun by inane media, there are podcasts that rise above the rest. This is not one of those. Two middle-aged white guys from Middle America talk about random shit for about an hour or so. This is the Magical Talking Hatch.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of Women Be Different Than Men.
Okay.
It's a new comedy showcasing the foibles on both sides of the Battle of the Sexes. And remember, all's fair in love and war.
Okay.
I've just invented the worst sitcom ever from the 80s that didn't exist, but it really kind of did, didn't it?
Yeah, pretty much every sitcom, probably.
Yeah. No, this is an episode of the Interdimensional Magical Talking Hat.
That's right.
Because the assholes in Hat vs. Prime couldn't be bothered.
Again.
So we're back.
Yeah.
We're not going to tell you when this was recorded. I will give you a hint. Today, the high temperature was 74 degrees. But that's 74 degrees grillitude, which is a particular measurement that we use in this universe. Mm-hmm. I understand you guys use something called Fahrenheit or Celsius or centigrade. You got three of them.
And some guy named Kelvin, too.
Yeah,
I
but
think.
we no, Calvin. That? Calvin.
Calvin.
Yes.
Sorry.
But we use grillitude here. And you don't know what that is, so you don't really know how hot it is. So it's not a big clue.
Why did we even mention it? I don't know.
I like to mess with them.
Yeah.
Remember, I'm evil, Tony.
Yeah, that's right. You like to mess with them.
Mm-hmm. How are those pennies working out for you? We're all evil here.
But, you know, it's okay because, you know, we're getting paid $10. I finally got my $50, and I'll get $10 for this one.
I'm getting paid in good-tasting toothpaste.
Well, okay, fine for you, but I'll take cash.
And here's Evil Ezzy. Picture the little gray kitty with a little goatee on the front.
Cute goatee. Whoa. She didn't like that.
She never does. Is it, I don't know if you do that to her. Okay. Don't sit on the hat. We have to draw out of the hat.
She likes to sit on the hat.
She really does.
I wonder if the Ezzy in the other dimension likes to do that. Do they have an Ezzy over there? They probably do.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Oh, do they?
You never listened. Yeah. She's the smart one.
Let's see.
What do we got?
Anon.
Oh, we got an anonymous one.
This one has... The hat has abbreviated it, it looks like.
Oh, this one has given us the gist, because somebody wrote too much and the hat couldn't fit it all onto a card / didn't want to get writer's cramp.
Regarding movie shawarma.
Shawarma, movie shawarma. This is a new concept, people. Some of you may have heard of it, some of you may have not. It is the thing that happens when something happens at the end of the credits. Namesake coming from the Avengers movie recently.
So they point out that Men in Black 3 doesn't have any shawarma, so what's a movie where you expected shawarma but didn't get one?
I find it weird. The more I think about it, I think shawarma really usually only seems to show up in superhero movies.
Right. right, but...
I felt like it showed up in other places, but when I stopped to think about it, I think those are the big ones.
Well, they... the Pirates of the Caribbean movies all had it, I think.
Did they? Okay, so you only saw the first two.
Well, one of them might not have, and maybe that's one where I expected and I didn't get it or something. I don't know. But it seems like there have been others. I'm trying to think.
At this point, I always figure, like, if you're bucking for a sequel, you should do it. And so anytime something that clearly is hoping to get a sequel, I'm kind
of
surprised.
It seems like there was a series of animated films. Like, did Pixar do it for a while?
Pixar does a lot of in-credit stuff.
Gosh, it seems like there was a film series or films from a particular company where they did it on some of their films, but not on all of them. So you just had a habit of waiting till it was done, and now I can't remember. I want to say Pixar, but I don't think it was Pixar.
I feel like, and this is a brilliant idea for a website, enough such that it must already exist. There's got to be a website that just collects data on whether or not there's shawarma at the end.
I know there are films from a particular studio or something where, you know, just let's wait because sometimes they have something at the end and you'd wait and sometimes they do and sometimes they don't.
Well, all of the Avengers ones.
No. Even before that.
You're talking about a studio specifically.
Yeah. Like I say, Pixar's sticking in my head, but it's not them. It's somebody else. And Pirates of the Caribbean was one where they always had something at the end. What was another one? Hellboy, maybe they had? I don't remember. I think I'm going to give up.
If only we had some sort of song about that.
Yeah, we could... I probably do that so often, we could probably have a segment on it. Where I start to try to remember something and then I give up. But anyway, yeah, I don't remember.
All right, well...
But can you think of a movie where you expected to see something at the end and didn't?
Well, for a while, I think I must have been seeing a lot of them, because I got to where I kind of expected it from every movie. And it's funny, because it was... I'm sitting in the theater, I'm like, well, should I go now? Well, are you expecting shawarma? Yes or no? If yes, do you care enough?
Yeah.
Because there are some movies that I'm like, I don't think this will get a sequel. Even if it does, I won't see it. So do I really care about the shawarma? Because primarily, I mean, namesake notwithstanding, shawarma is often about setting up for the next one.
Right, but not always. Like in the Pirates.
Sometimes it's a joke.
In the Pirates movies, it's not. They don't do it in those.
And that can be fun, those can be very amusing.
Maybe there's a distinction between the ones that are setting up for a sequel and the ones that aren't.
Possibly. Interesting little tidbit. I suppose technically it is a spoiler, but a minor one at best. Video game Mass Effect 3 has shawarma. And fairly significant shawarma with regard to the ending. So... if you play Mass Effect 3, watch all the way through the credits because something happens afterwards, and it actually, it's a fairly sort of important epilogue. And this is true if you play the original ending or the extended ending. So now even video games are having shawarma. I have played video games that had in-character or in-credit stuff before. I played the video game, one of BioWare's earlier ones, Jade Empire. During the credits, it has two... basically fake, like, commentary track things where two of the voice actors talk about making the video game. But they talk more like they were the characters, like that they were actors in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And that was fun. And then it ends with a few weird I don't even know if they were outtakes. There were some very serious monologues from one particular character. And at the end, they have him doing... silly versions, like, in his same voice that always crack me up.
But you can't name a movie where you expected it, didn't get it.
For some reason, I expected it in Dark Shadows. Mm-hmm. And I don't know why. But I felt like that movie would have it, and it did not.
Well, if I could remember, there's this, like I said, it wasn't Pixar, but someone like that...
You don't seem like you've given up.
Frequently would do this, and so when they made another movie, you'd sit and wait, and sometimes they didn't, sometimes.
Someone write the hat. Not write the hat, sorry. No, someone go to the blog and answer this for William. What studio was getting pretty consistent on shawarma for all of their movies so that you would stay just because that company made that movie? Which one? Tell us. We need to know. Thank you, Anonymous, for that question. Next. You haven't given up.
I know. I just think it's going to come to me sooner or later.
You're not going to write a song if you're not actually going to give up.
No, I'm giving up.
All right. Oh, another one that has been somewhat abbreviated. People apparently are writing pretty big questions lately.
Oh.
This one is from Lois Lane.
Lois, why we haven't heard from her for a while.
Dearest Magical Hat. Aww.
Wonder what's going on there.
Question for William.
For me?
Yes.
Oh. I don't know if I want to know.
William doesn't talk. How many times do we have to tell you? No, I don't. If Tony were a weapon, what would he be and why?
Wait a minute. What about if I'm a weapon?
Nope.
If Tony were a weapon, what would he be and why?
Maybe she wrote a different question asking me if you were a weapon.
Maybe. Okay, fine, Lois.
If I were a weapon.
If you were a weapon.
A weapon of unbelievable devastation.
Well, maybe, maybe not.
No, wipe out whole civilizations in just one oof.
Well, if Tony were a weapon.
A weapon.
It'd
be that lethal joke from Monty Python.
Okay, how about this?
Alright, lay it on me.
You know a catapult or a trebuchet or whatever?
Yeah.
The thing you put in it to shoot at things, does that count as a weapon? Or is that kind of artillery?
I'm a big rock.
Whatever. That's probably what you'd be.
I feel like not only is that an insulting answer, it's also kind of a safe answer.
Well,
I feel like it's simultaneously insulting me and yet hedging your bets so as not to insult me too drastically.
Well, the thing is, you know, when asked a question like this, what you're supposed to do, I presume, is you're supposed to sort of take your general characteristics and from that, you know.
Oh, so you're calling me fat?
No.
You're.
It's not about your size or weight.
You didn't call me a bullet. You didn't call me a slingstone. You called me the thing you put in a trebuchet.
Well, because you are bigger than those things. And my thinking here has nothing
to do... Yes, please enlighten us on your thinking.
Has nothing to do with your weight or your size, other than the fact that a bullet or a, you know, a slingshot stone is just... That's too small, of course. Is because your most notable attribute is your inactivity. So if you're going to be a weapon, it has to be a weapon that is destructive and yet doesn't do anything.
I'm not going to say you've stopped digging the hole. You maybe traded in the shovel for a smaller shovel.
Now, you could be a hand grenade, because there's something that doesn't really do anything except it gets tossed and then it blows up. But you don't... You're not exactly explosive or incendiary, really.
I'm working on it.
Well, I know, but you're not. So, an explosive device, while it would fit the, you don't necessarily have to do anything but blow up, like a bomb or, you know, or anything like that, it still doesn't fit. No, it has to be something that that is lethal in its inactivity. And the only thing I could think of was, you know, something that's shot from a catapult or a trebuchet.
Okay. At the risk of continuing this, what if I was a literal weapon? If you were going to use me to kill someone, how would you do it?
What do you mean? If you were a literal weapon.
Yes.
I don't understand how the question is different than the question that I was already asked.
Well, I'm not a hand grenade. I don't explode.
Oh, so if...
Literally.
If you were...
You are going to use Tony, you. Actual Tony, oh. to kill someone. This could be Tony's body, or this could be Tony the person.
But you have to be the weapon. I can't yes. give you a gun and say, shoot somebody.
No, that's what... You could use me as an assassin.
Well,
or
that's
you
probably
could just
what I would do.
Pick me up by... Yeah, but so what method... First of all, how would you entice me to do it? And second of all, what method would you have me employ that would be most effective?
Well, I can think of a lot of ways I could entice you to do it, but I would probably rather get you to do it without you realizing you're doing it.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes the method all the trickier.
Yes, what I would...
Here's a fun squirt gun, Tony! I'm just taking glass eye!
Well, Does it matter who you're killing? I mean, are there any restrictions on who you're killing?
I don't believe so.
Because if the person...
I mean, if who I'm killing affects the method, you should...
It does a little, because I'm thinking... Let's say the person had a severe peanut allergy.
Oh.
And maybe you didn't know that.
You would give me some sort of baked good to take to them. That
or I would have you, you know, eat some peanuts or whatever, then go, oh, shake their hand and say hello, or, you know, something like that, really sneaky like that.
I feel like... A lethal... I feel like, despite what TV has shown us, assassination attempt by peanut allergy is tricky
well,
at best.
Okay. But I would probably use some method of poison.
Poison.
Yeah. All right, and have some way of you delivering it without you realizing that's what you're doing.
Alright. If you were a weapon...
Mm-hmm.
Nobody asked me, I'm telling you anyway. You were a weapon. You would be one of those... They have different names I've discovered over the years, but those firework things, you know, the little things that you throw on the ground and the pop?
Yeah.
You know, you would be one of those. So not really at all effective.
No.
But still... bothering people.
Unnerving a little sometimes.
And for reasons you can't even express, even though you know logically it doesn't make sense, you just really don't want it near you. And really you just want to direct it at others and laugh.
But wait, I assumed that I was supposed to imagine that you were some kind of lethal weapon. You can't imagine me being a lethal weapon?
Well, if I was going to literally use you as a weapon and to kill someone, I would have you go to them and explain to them, if they were a weapon, what kind of weapon you would see, and tell them that story.
Oh, come on. It wasn't that bad. Did I hurt your feelings?
No.
Okay.
You just bored me to tears.
All right. Well, if I hurt your feelings, I didn't mean to do that.
No, not at all.
Okay.
Anytime, well, for starters, anytime I accuse anyone of calling me fat, I'm not really offended. Because, A, nobody's ever actually trying to call me fat, and B, I'm fat.
Right.
So the combination of those two things.
But I didn't mean that at all. I was, that had nothing
like
to do with
it. Like I said, A, nobody's ever actually trying to call me fat. Oh, no. That's my fault. Nobody, including you, is ever trying to call me fat. Sorry, no, that is my own rule. You adhered to it. I am sorry. No one ever, including you, is actually trying to call me fat.
Yeah, that really had nothing to do with my...
And B, even if they were, I'm fat. So, no. Just bored. Just super... I can't remember a time when you weren't talking about this, is what I'm saying. In my life. Did I have a family before this? Was there another...
Yeah, and someone killed them all, and then you became a vigilante and...
Going around shaking people's hands with peanuts on them.
Yeah.
On the off chance.
A dozen or so died.
I'm a serial killer whose targets are people allergic to peanuts. Not because I hate them, but because I am too lazy to do anything except just rub peanut dust on my hand and shake a lot of hands.
Well, that's true, isn't it?
Oh, I want to write that story. It'd be like Dexter, but so stupid. Oh, man.
Okay.
The laziest serial killer. Oh, I love this idea. The laziest serial killer. This could be a short film.
Could be.
Oh, we need this to happen.
Could be. But
we gotta make
how
this.
Would the serial killer... Well, like you said, on the off chance. Because they couldn't do the work to find out who actually has...
But shaking a lot of hands is still a thing. We gotta find something that is just incredibly... Like, maybe you just, like, drive to parking garages and leave the car on and lock the doors so that if somebody happens to be there... Like, we have to come up with something that's just incredibly inactive and yet technically could, at random chance, kill someone.
Well, yeah.
Oh, this is a... Write on the blog, people. TheMagicalTalkingHead.com. Give us some ideas. We got to make this a thing. Oh, I love this idea. The laziest serial killer. Oh, brilliant. Magic. All right. Maybe just takes, like, knives and occasionally, like, just drops them off the top of a building.
Just in case
random.
There's someone
Somebody
there.
Will get hit. Yeah. Check the news that night. Oh, so many ways to go. So to speak. What do we got?
Mark McKibben.
Mark McKibben! Hard hat number one in every universe.
In every universe. Dear TMTH, plasma or LCD?
Oh.
A lot of debate around that one.
Is there still?
Well, I don't know. I guess there used to be.
Aren't we doing LED now more than everybody did?
I don't know.
I remember this debate back when we didn't have an HDTV yet and we were thinking about it.
Isn't it just a burn-in problem like plasma, right? As burn-in problems?
Here's the thing. Plasma just sucks. As near as I can tell, it's a fairly straightforward thing. Plasma has burn-in problems. Plasma uses significantly more electricity. Plasma gets significantly hotter. So I don't get why...
Well, I think people think it's a better picture. I think they think that.
Really?
Anyway. So it's worth some of the problems that you...
Possibly. It also, at least, was at one time more expensive.
Again, with all of these difficulties, there's only one thing it could possibly have
it
going for
to
it.
Be, yeah.
It is the picture's a little bit better. But some people found
people
that to be...
That's why people buy Hummers.
Because it
the picture's
picture.
Better, yeah. Oh. I mean, worse gas mileage, harder on the environment, very expensive.
Mm.
Picture's better.
Yeah, better picture, sure. So, I don't know. I guess we have I don't know what we have.
You don't?
No, I don't.
You were not an active shopper?
Well, it's not a plasma, I know that. Whatever else there is besides LCD.
It's an L something D.
Something, I don't know what it is. It's a television. And and it's a pretty sharp picture. And it's flat. That's all I know.
I went to a restaurant.
It wasn't really my purchase.
The other day, where there was a very small, probably 13-inch, flat screen TV in a hole in the wall up near the top of a wall in the men's room showing ESPN Sports Center. And I wanted to take a photo of it and call it America.
Yeah, welcome to it.
But I did not. So, yeah. Thanks, Mark.
Mark, you can let us
know
what you think. Yeah.
And there may be some details we're missing. What do the rest of y'all got? We're at a point where I think most people have HDTVs. I feel like we were late to the game. We wouldn't even have one now, except the mother-in-law got us one.
Well,
and now I love it, and I can never go back. I will have to, like, rob a bank if this one breaks.
It's funny because, I've never really owned a lot of electronics. I mean... I live in a house that has electronics now, but they're not really mine mostly. But I used to sell electronics at Sears. And when I was selling televisions...
Did they have HDTVs yet?
No. But...
did they have TVs yet?
Yeah, they did.
Okay.
And people would ask me, they thought they were being really smart by asking what I own, because if I sell TVs, I'm going to own, the best television for the money or whatever. And I didn't own one. And then you know what they did?
Hmm.
They asked me, well, what do you do? Like, Seriously. They weren't sure and what I did with my time.
Stare in my neighbor's windows.
No. I told them, well...
I sell TVs.
There was something that existed before television called books. And there's stuff going on outside all the time. There's museums. You know, I can list 1,000 things that I did besides
and
watch television.
And then you made them feel bad and never made a sale.
No, they bought a television anyway, but I couldn't believe they were going to ask me that question. Like, what is there to do besides watch television?
People ask me how I survive without a cell phone.
I guess I get asked that question, too.
Generally speaking, when I see most women, I say, you don't have a penis? How does that even work?
I see. I suppose we could move on to the next thing now.
For those of you listening, seriously, write on the blog and explain. What do you do without a penis? I don't even understand that. How does that work? If I didn't have mine, I don't know what I'd do with all my time. I'd get rid of my TV, but I need to keep my penis.
Okay, that's good to know. Moving on.
All right, is it my turn?
Yeah. Music to accompany drawing out of the hat. That's a new thing.
That was a fart. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh.
All right. We have another abbreviated one.
Wow, that's the third one.
Which is impressive because it's pretty big already.
Oh.
This one is from a Brenda Lee. I don't recall that name.
I don't either. Brenda Lee?
Yes, Brenda Lee.
Like
Vivian Lee.
Like Brenda Lee Johnson from
Brenda
The Closer.
Lee. Which, do you watch The Closer?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, okay. Hi, Mr. Hat. If you were given the opportunity to know and understand everything, would you do it? Why or why not?
You know, before we answer this question... This is the first time we've ever had a question from this person, so that's kind of cool.
I believe that, yeah.
So, welcome to the Magical Talking Hat. If you were given the opportunity to know and understand everything, would you do it? Why or why not? Know or understand everything. I guess I'm not even sure I can grasp what that would entail exactly.
Let me try and help you.
Okay.
We're talking true omniscience.
Do you think that's what she's saying?
Trust me.
Okay.
Says if I have a link to what was going on in the hat's email. True omniscience, knowing everything, which includes everybody's thoughts and memories and knowledge of the past and future, everything.
Okay, well, what's your answer?
I gotta think about it. You answer. I'm thinking.
Yes, I would do it.
Would you really?
Yes. I wouldn't even hesitate if it was the real deal. Wouldn't hesitate at all.
I feel like it becomes a weird metaphysical issue. Because I don't even know if you would really exist anymore.
Yeah, I understand that point, but... And there's all kinds of other questions, like, if I become omniscient, will I also become omnipotent? Or, you know, what does do these things go together? Or, you know, would I also know the secret of immortality and therefore I would never, you know, there's questions like that.
Yeah.
But just leaving all that aside, just going sheerly with what you just said, omnipotence.
Omniscience, not omniscience.
I'm sorry, omniscience. Of course. I mean, there's not even any doubt in my mind.
I feel like I would not.
And I'm not surprised that you would not.
But it potentially comes down to an issue of perspective. If I had the capacity to temporarily cut off some of that knowledge, if I'm not knowing everything simultaneously at all times, then maybe. Because this is a thing, and this gets a little... We're going to get a little nerdy here.
Well, I was kind of presuming that you would keep some of your... I mean, you have that faculty as a normal human being to filter out what you're thinking about consciously. So you're saying that...
Well, but what we're talking about is impossible for a normal human being, so I don't think necessary methods of normal human thinking apply.
Okay. I don't know. It's... I was just presuming that, you know, the gift of omniscience wasn't going to be you have total awareness of all things at all time, and therefore you're incapable, perhaps, of, say, you and I couldn't even have a conversation, because...
Well, it's irrelevant.
I wouldn't even be able to...
Well, and you would already know the conversation.
Yes, that's going to be true regardless. But I would be aware that you're not, so there would be some part of me that can still have the conversation with you, even though I know exactly what you're going to say. See, what you're saying is with omniscience, you lose all sense of time and perspective of time. But is that true?
Well, I don't know. This becomes a thing. Is the knowledge something you can retrieve, or is the knowledge something that you have?
I suppose, again...
But this is the stuff of... But it's even more than... just the way humans do it, because I couldn't, even if I operated that way, I couldn't begin this conversation with you without already knowing how it's going to go. I mean, even if it's not conscious, I'd be like, oh yeah, this conversation, and my memory would be like, yes, and it's like this. If there was a way that I could cut that off temporarily and say, you know what, I want to just see how this conversation goes for now.
Well, in my third book, I have characters who...
This comes up in your books. Yeah. This comes up in your second book as well.
Right. But in the third one, you know, you actually meet a character who kind of has this very issue you're talking about. But he does have the ability to sort of slip into a particular perspective and sort of exist there sort of as if he doesn't really know what's going to happen.
Yeah. And if I can do that kind of stuff, I'm fine. And this was the thing that always got me. This is really letting my nerd flag fly here. But I think very few of us who are sci-fi geeks and who have watched Star Trek The Next Generation can have helped from at some point saying, what would it be like if I had the powers of Q? What would that be like? And I know whenever I have thought that, I've very much had the whole... I mean, they did an episode dealing with it, a couple of episodes dealing with this. And I very much have had the whole, that would be cool for like a little while, and then I would get really boring and pointless. Except, they have made points in with Q that he has the capacity to create situations which, in his own words, he gives a life of its own. And so he doesn't know how it would play out. And so if I still had the capacity to not know things at times of my choosing, then I would probably do it. But if I just knew everything and so never had... If I was no longer ever able to be surprised again, I do not believe I would do it. If I had the capacity, whether by force or not, to feel surprise, then I would not.
I... guess I tend to think that the pleasure and the joy in knowing something isn't so much from it being surprising. It's from it having some inherent quality of bliss or beauty, so that if you knew everything, you would never get bored or whatever. No, you wouldn't be surprised in the temporal sense of you don't know something and then you know something and it's unexpected and amusing in some way. But you would see it all in how everything connects, and it would be so powerful that could sustain you in a kind of bliss or ecstasy forever.
This makes me think of Roger.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's a microcosmic version.
I suppose.
But his dreams prior to shit hitting the fan.
That's true. But I do think that the cosmos or the multiverse or whatever you want to call it, if you could grasp it all, there's something so amazing about it that you, even if you knew it, quote unquote, and understood it and comprehended it, it would never cease. you would never leave that state of absolute amazement at how elegant and complex it is.
See, and I feel you can only come to that conclusion through something of a leap of faith, and I don't think I have that same faith.
Oh well, yes, you're right. But of course, yeah, I do have that faith. Yeah. I mean, in fact, a lot of people would probably say that's one of my defining characteristics, is that I do have that faith, and it's, you know, it's probably unshakable, really. And I only say that because I've gone through a lot of things recently in my life that have challenged it fairly significantly, and yet it doesn't seem to leave me. So.
Well, the great news is you're talking about a scale so large that anything that will ever happen in your life is such a tiny blip.
That's right.
You're like, my every instant of my existence could be nothing but torment and pain and horror. It doesn't mean that the vast majority of existence is not incredibly awesome. I just happen to get in the shitty little part. Yeah.
And believe it or not, that kind of thinking often gives me great comfort. I don't know why, but it does. Some people, I suppose, if they think that, would think, you know, it's not fair that the rest of the universe is so awesome and I'm having such a hard time. But I just don't think that way. And for one thing, even the things that have challenged me the most, I mean, I realize I've gone through, you know, nothing compared to what a lot of other people go through today and in times past. And I do have some perspective on that. But the things that have happened to me that I don't like or that have hurt me deeply, I don't know. I don't tend to ask why me or feel like it's not fair. In fact, and some people who go through such things and see other people having their life is good, they are feel jealous or whatever. But I always feel encouraged. It's like, well, then, you know, if that goodness is happening over there, then, you know, that means some goodness can happen for me, and I'm not always going to be in this bad situation. So,
but no.
No, that's really how it works, and that's just how I was raised, I guess.
When you assume.
Oh, poor Jim McGregor.
You think he's still alive?
Well, probably.
Don't assume.
Oh, I won't.
Because you make a dead ass out of Jim McGregor. Okay, we're getting a little inside baseball, which is weird to say because I'm pretty sure we've explained the joke before, but I don't feel like explaining it again, so. All right, then. So, thank you, Brenda, and welcome.
Yes.
Unless you're just a pseudonym.
Well, still welcome.
But you're welcome, but yeah.
Do I get to draw another one?
Yeah, now it's your turn.
Okay. I love burning through the question. That's awesome.
Yeah, but if we burn through them, people, you got to send in more. TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Email us with some shit so we can deal with it.
Anon asks, what are your thoughts on the book 50 Shades of Grey?
Oh, my.
Well, I can't offer very many thoughts. I haven't read it. I'm aware of its existence and a little bit about what it's about. I think the most... But I suppose that Anon might be asking or might be interested to know what our thoughts are about the phenomena and why it's such a popular thing. But maybe... Have you read it?
Oh, no.
Oh.
Oh, no.
Why do you... say that like that?
Largely because it's a series of books that literally started life as Twilight fan fiction, so I was not going to go near that shit. And also, from what I have been able to glean, it has two characteristics that would completely prevent me from reading it. One, they're not very well written books. And two, their level of pornography, shall we say, is nothing I can't get in many, many, many different areas of the internet of much better quality.
I see.
I am slightly, as a long-time active pervert, And somebody who has been involved in a lot of alternative sexual movements and groups and active groups and things like that, I'm pleased that I'm pleased that this stuff that some would say was somewhat kinky is hitting the mainstream really hard. I feel like this is broadening society's collective horizon. So I like it for that aspect. From what I can tell, though, however, it is poorly written work. It is a really sort of almost disconcertingly badly put together romance, as it were. And really not nearly as impressive and sensationalist as it tries to make itself out to be. But which is pretty much Twilight when it comes down to it.
So is it culturally groundbreaking or not? I mean, you're saying that it indicates that a certain types of practices are being mainstreamed, and that seems positive to you, but at the same time, it's
culturally veneer breaking. Let me put it that way. Okay. I think it is breaking through the incredibly thin, shallow crust on our culture, but it's not really having any impact below that. Which means it's a first step.
I see.
Something being able to claim that it's changing the game like this and being this successful theoretically makes it that much easier for the next thing that actually does.
Well, what do you think's going on? I mean, does it surprise you that it's popular?
No, not especially.
And is that because you always knew this was going on under the surface and it really probably wouldn't have taken that much to crack the surface and it's just surprising that it took this long for it to happen?
I think it might have been surprising to me prior to the Twilight phenomenon.
Oh.
But I feel that this is hitting that same core, but it's giving gratification. This is hitting the same buttons that Twilight hit with people, but it's not a giant tease.
I see.
Because that's what people... It's Twilight for grown-ups. Twilight is technically a young adult thing. This actually deals with... And it's all naughty and kinky and scary. And it's really mild. It's light bondage and spanking stuff, as near as I can tell, throughout the whole thing. So it's on the really tame end. But it's still, you know, for a mainstream book and compared to Twilight and stuff, you know, it's really getting into the dirty stuff here. And so I think it's stoking that fire. It's the one step further that people wanted. I thought Twilight was atrocious as literature and as a cultural artifact. Full disclosure, didn't read it, but still. And I feel like this is the same stuff, just with a little more sex involved.
Why do you think that when the sex includes, like you're saying, bondage and some a little bit rougher in terms of... I don't know how to... It's not really sadomasochism. I mean, there's not a lot of... The milder stuff, there's no actual...
It's spanking. Spanking is generally considered its own fetish
category. Okay. So why do you think when that enters in, it's thought of as more kinky or dirtier sex or whatever? I mean, do we have an expectation in this culture that sex is one way and you do it for... particular situations and such that anything that deviates from it is kinky?
Well, arguably, by modern psychological definitions, let's take these two specifically. Bondage, we'll say mild bondage, and spanking. Both of these are arguably at least somewhat fetishistic. These are non-sexual acts that are being sexualized.
Okay, yeah, I guess you're right.
If one thinks of sex normally, it does not involve inhibiting one's physical motion inherently. And bondage is the specific act of doing that to lesser or greater degrees. And spanking is, socially speaking, a punishment parents do on children.
Okay, so you are saying that there are very specific expectations about what proper and appropriate sex is.
I believe so.
And that...
Well, I believe there are modern psychological definitions of inherently sexual activity versus perceived sexual activity. And when you take something that is not inherently sexual activity and perceive it as sexual, we call it a fetish.
Okay. I see what
you're
saying.
And we call it kinky.
Yeah, yeah.
I believe there is a social definition of sex that, in its basic form, does not include tying someone to the bed or spanking them.
Well, I would... Not only do I agree with your point, but I would say it also includes specific times when it's okay to have sex and who to have sex
positions
with.
Positions and...
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely.
But what's interesting is that so extreme is this definition for what is appropriate for sex that almost even any slight deviation from it, no matter how slight, it creates a huge stir, either in people protesting it or flocking toward it.
Because there's a huge dearth of such material.
Right, but what's...
Because literally there is no book that you and your friends and the people across the country have all heard of that deals with any of this. So even though this book deals with somewhat small doses of it, because it has found such mainstream acceptance and success, it's huge.
Well, but before, the reason it got mainstream success is what I'm getting at. What I'm saying is that there's something artificial about these expectations about what is appropriate sex.
I would agree.
Do you see what I'm saying?
Yes.
That you know, we can say that I think the fact that this work is so popular by itself, much less so popular, even though relative to some things that might be labeled kinky, it's actually quite mild. I think what it shows us is that American culture in particular has very narrow views about what is appropriate sexual behavior.
Yes.
Who you have it with, when you have it, what you do while you're having it.
And that is changing as a social artifact. I believe it has been more diverse than society believes.
No, I suppose so, but...
Well, and Albert Kinney brought that to life.
Sure, but furthermore, the fact that this artificial definition of sex exists is very repressive for a lot of people.
Absolutely.
To the extent that there might be a lot of people who really aren't into being tied up or being spanked, but just the fact that it's different,
yes,
just the fact that it's not this strict picture, because it portrays sex that's often repressed. Even if you're not interested in that sex, you repress some other interest.
Well,
and so you find this, yes, interesting.
And that becomes a whole other kink, which is the category of taboo.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
The more homogenous our sexual identity is in this culture, the more appealing to certain individuals those things outside, regardless of what they are.
Exactly,
are.
Exactly.
And there are also probably a lot of people out there who are into way more crazy things than being tied up and getting spanked. But they've never considered it because they have been properly acculturated here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And for what it is worth, these books may convince them to go find other stuff, both in terms of their entertainment and in terms of their actual experiences.
So then the question,
and insofar as it does that, I'm very pleased with them.
But then the question becomes this. If the culture didn't have those very specific definitions for what's appropriate sex, and thereby creating so much repression. Let's say it didn't have those definitions. Mm-hmm. Would people... Does the definition and the subsequent repression lead to people developing various types of kinks, I guess
think,
you could say?
I think modern psychology would say yes.
And if that's true, if we had a more open-minded perspective on sex, like, you know, we didn't have any specific definitions for who you do it with and when you do it and whether they're the same sex as you, different sex, more than one person, whatever, if we didn't have any of those restrictions, would the spectrum of kink be not as have, would the, you know, would it have fewer extremes, so to speak?
I think psychology as it is today would say yes. And I think to a certain degree I would agree with that. Those fetishes, those kinks I personally have in some cases, I genuinely can connect them to issues I've had in my past. Frequently, traumas I've had in my past.
Now let me ask you this. Do you see, then, the kink as being something that allows you to cope with it? Or do you see it as something... Because I think some people who would say what you just said would feel like the kink is a symptom of their trauma, and that if they dealt with their trauma in a healthy way, they would no longer have the kink. But other people would say, no, the kink is something I use to cope with the trauma, and it's okay that I have it, because, you know, if I didn't, then I would probably have some other unhealthy way of
dealing with trauma. Yes, those are frequently the two schools of thought, that the one is preventing you from moving on, that the practice is preventing you from moving on. Or that the practice is helping you process.
Exactly.
For myself personally, I have never... For a while, I pondered it, and I eventually stopped. Because these things are rooted in me to a degree that I don't think it's going to change. And, to be perfectly frank, I enjoy them for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
That's how they are kinks. And I don't find that I'm hurting myself or others with them. So I don't worry about it. But I think there is a lot going on to think about. I think it is largely academic.
I suppose.
Or on a certain scale, it becomes sociological. But especially for the individual, I think it is largely academic.
Well, I am of the opinion that so long as what you're doing isn't exploitive to someone else, especially, but also to you, you know, I tend to subscribe to the school of thought that it's therapeutic.
I would generally agree. There is more to it, because while I don't spend a lot of time trying to figure out why certain things make me feel certain ways, I do think it is important to determine how those things make you feel.
No, I agree.
Because sometimes certain kinks, for lack of a better word, you are into, and you may even have physical, sexual responses and so forth, but in reality they actually are causing you more emotional and psychological stress, and you end up on the other side feeling worse about yourself.
Yeah, yeah.
That sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Issues of shame, humiliation, and degradation are very common in the world of all the different fetishes and kinks out there. And again, this can be a therapeutic thing, but people can do that and then internalize that and genuinely, you know, harm their own self-image in the process.
Exactly.
And feed
that's
that.
Right,
so
that's right.
I do think you need to say to yourself, what are these things doing to me?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I am less concerned with why do those things happen to do this to me? But I do try and think about what they are doing and therefore what are the consequences.
Well, and that's what I mean by exploiting yourself. I mean, you do have to...
Damaging might be a more...
Yeah, yeah, damaging. Word. That's a better word. I agree with everything you just said. But providing you've processed that through and you don't feel like, you know, it's something you're doing to maybe punish yourself for something you feel guilty for or any number of other things like you were just mentioning, I guess I have a hard time seeing it as anything but therapeutic. And a lot of people who entertain these types of interests or fetishes or whatever will even admit that it's a way, you know, they entertain this fascination in a safe way, in an environment that's safe.
Amongst the BDSM community, the common phrase is safe, sane, and consensual.
Yes, exactly.
And those are, strictly speaking, the only rules, as it were.
Right. And so they very much see it as a way to deal with this in a very healthy way, as opposed to an unhealthy way. And I don't know if the people I've talked to are afraid that they would like abuse somebody if they didn't have a safe outlet. But I think they're glad to know they have a safe outlet in case that is something that is part of who they are inside them somewhere. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I tend to. But to me, if you're anyone who thinks that these kinks or whatever indicate some unhealthy ways of dealing with sexuality, well, then what we really need to do is is stop having a culture that's got these weird rules about sex. Yeah. That's where the problem lies, not in the what people are doing.
Oh, yes, because, like I say, so many of them are based on shame, humiliation, degradation.
Yes, yes.
Where do you think they get that from?
Exactly, exactly. Now, again, you know, if someone's exploiting someone or if it's not consensual or something, well, to me, that's a whole different thing.
Absolutely.
That's a, you're not even, it doesn't even matter that it's about sex. It's exploitation, it's rape, yes, for example. Yes. Whether or not there's sex involved is kind of a side issue. It's violent, is what I'm getting at.
As an actual act.
Yes, right.
Don't even get me into the whole issues of fantasy. People can fantasize about anything they
want. That's right.
That's
right.
I do not believe in thought crime.
That's right. But what I'm saying is that, to me, and we've had this conversation about pornography. It's kind of a similar thing. To me, the problem is when something goes from being sexual to, you know, non-consensually violent.
Yes.
Now, and to me, you've gone into a complete other realm there, and you don't have to control sexual activity or porn or anything like that in order to address that issue.
Yes. Controlling agency, issues of agency.
When it becomes non-consensual violence, well, then you're in a totally different realm, and it doesn't matter that sex is even involved. Yes. But if you don't like what people are doing, well, first of all, it's none of your business. But one way to get at the problem is, like you just said, where do you think that comes from? We have this culture that's so weird about sex and sexual practices and trying to tell people who can... I mean, even in our United States government that's so proud of being, you know...
Land of the free.
Yeah, open-minded and all this, and you can do whatever you want as long as you're not impinging on the rights of other people... So many people think they can still justify making laws that tell people who they can sleep with and and whatever. And, it's like,
and that's the thing.
That's incredible to me.
Whenever people go the slippery slope issue with homosexuality and they're like, well, then we open the door for bestiality and pedophilia. I'm like, no, because it's the same thing here. You're talking about harm and you're talking about agency.
Yeah.
Children, by dint of their immaturity and physical and mental and emotional... are not in a position where we feel that they can genuinely consent. And animals, by dint of their perceived lower intelligence and inability to clearly communicate with us, are incapable of consent. Therefore, not okay.
No, therefore, you're not even talking about sex per se. You're talking about rape.
Exactly.
You're talking about a violent crime, not
a
sexual crime.
But if you're talking about consenting adults, who cares? And this is a funny one I get into. The nature of homosexuality. And the whole, is it a choice? Well, the choice thing, I think, but, you know, is it nature versus nurture? You know, is there a biological thing for whatever? I have feelings about it. I have opinions. I don't know. I'm not a scientist. I have opinions. I don't generally discuss them because, again, for me, is only academic curiosity. Because I'm like, if it's how they were raised... if it's in their genes, if it's something they just came up with on a lark one night when they were drunk and feeling funny, there's absolutely no harm. It doesn't matter.
That's
like,
right.
It's like, I'm not trying to figure out if my enjoyment of scrambled eggs was born in my genetics or how I was raised either. It might be interesting to find out, but it doesn't really matter because me eating scrambled eggs is like,
well, and
there's nothing wrong with that.
And
so
even,
therefore,
and even if you think there's something wrong with it, you don't have any justification to make it illegal or to stop other people from doing it.
Unless, I'm not hurting anybody except the damn chickens by eating the scrambled eggs. But I mean, to make anything like that, if no one else is being hurt, if everybody involved is capable of consenting and is giving consent, and no other harm is being happened, no damage to property or others, no trauma involved. Not only do I, like all smart people in the world, consider that perfectly fine, but those of you that don't, it's none of your fucking business.
Right. Well, and that's, I'm often frustrated with people who are, you know, outside of the heteronormative realm, getting caught up in these arguments about, well, are you born with it? Do you choose it or whatever? Again, I also have ideas about that, and I think they're interesting, but most of the time they're having these discussions, they're trying to defend what they do, and my feeling is, don't let yourself be put on the defensive.
Yeah.
The people who are asking you if you were born this way or whatever, or trying to get you to explain it, you should throw the question back at them and say, why does it matter?
Yeah.
Why do you care? Prove to me that I need to explain this to you. And when you can do that, I'll sit and figure it out. But after that, just leave me alone. It's none of your business.
I get in trouble sometimes with the transgender community, of which I consider myself a part, because I, and again, I don't have a lot about, I'm willing to admit I'm wrong, but my genuine opinion is gender is socially constructed, which means I don't really believe deep in your heart you're born a certain gender, which means ultimately I don't know that I really believe the born in, the, like you were a girl who was born in a boy's body kind of thing. I don't know that I believe that as a real thing. I believe that as a psychological concept, but and that pisses people off because they have very strong feelings about that. Here's the thing. I still think it's absolutely fine for you to go through gender reassignment surgery. I think you can do whatever you want. And especially if you feel strongly about it, and if you really feel that way, then it, I'm not trivializing it. It is just as serious a thing, and it should be something that you should deal with, and I would like to help you with that. And I absolutely think you should have all the rights you need as related to that.
And you shouldn't be discriminated against.
Exactly.
I completely agree. I would probably say it, no, I definitely would say it in stronger terms than you from a scientific perspective. Well, first of all, I would say absolutely that gender is completely culturally defined. There's no scientific basis for the notion that someone's born a woman in a man's body or vice versa. And most of the time I've read articles about kids, for example, who feel like they were like a boy who felt like he was born a girl. All of the evidence that the parents and the family members use to prove this is that the kid likes to wear dresses and play with dolls, but those are gender things, not... But
also the
all
fact
of that's,
that other societies have more than two genders. That,
exactly. but all of that said, I think that it's an unprovable and unsupportable claim to say, well, this child was born as a girl in a boy's body. That said, this person wants to be a different sex and can have an operation to do so. What business is it of mine? And I completely defend that person against being harassed or not hired for a job because they're like this, because I think that's ridiculous.
And I acknowledge that for some people, whether or not it's a biological imperative, for whatever it is, it's a very important thing. And it is a severe psychological disconnect with which they need assistance.
Exactly.
And so if you don't feel like you're in the right body, it doesn't matter if genetically that's true. You don't feel like you're in the right body. You need help.
Yeah, well, and however you decide to get that help
is up to
you.
Exactly.
And I completely agree. But this is an interesting thing, though, because I've been...
this question was about 50 Shades of Grey, right? Wow. We've gone a long, strange trip.
This brings up something else that I've been investigating lately in relation to some of the work I'm doing. You're familiar with the otherkin subculture, right? No?
I don't think so.
Well, you probably are. People who believe that on some level, spiritual, metaphysical, whatever, they're not human, that they actually are something else, a dragon or a unicorn or a...
No, I wasn't familiar with this. I mean, except for Scientology.
Oh, well, no. There are a good number of people... Well, you're familiar that some people believe they're vampires, for example, or shapeshifters, or they might be a werewolf. You know, they're actually a wolf, but they...
I don't know that I know it. I find it terribly unsurprising.
Okay, well, there are such people, and there are people who think they're actually fairies or whatever. And the general label that these people have come up with themselves is otherkin. In other words, the thing they all have in common is that they only feel secondarily human. That their actual essence, their actual being is something else. And it can be a lot of things. In fact, it can be a character's, a hobbit, for example, which, you know, that just exists in Tolkien universe. But I find this phenomena very interesting because when you read the accounts of these people and they talk about whatever, and the vampire and werewolf stuff is pretty standard stuff because we're all familiar with these archetypes or whatever. But like I said, you have dragons, you have unicorns, you have fairies, you have other
things. Well, you could argue certain subsets of the furry community would probably fall into this category.
They do,
as well.
Actually. And
certain subsets, not all.
The phenomena is not unlike In my observation, anyway, and this is my humble observation, so I don't want to offend anyone who's listening who might identify with this subculture. But I think that's not unlike what transgender people might feel by not feeling like they are primarily the sex that they were born with. But this phenomenon is observed in other situations. For example, there was a study done, and I'm sorry I can't be very specific about when it was done and what it was about, but young African-American children were asked to rate the attractiveness of people they saw in photographs, and they consistently would say that other African-American people were unattractive while the Caucasian people were attractive.
Oh, my.
And the study demonstrated that these African-American children were conditioned by their culture to not like the color of their skin. Mm-hmm. Okay? Mm-hmm. So, to me, all of these phenomena are related. There is a sense in the person of what they're supposed to be based on their body, and they don't relate to that. For example, the other kin, they get a picture of what humanity is.
And they don't feel they fit that.
They do not feel like they fit that. And so they end up strongly associating with something else, to the point that these people report having, when they find something that they do relate to, like, say, a dragon, it's intense. It's like they have to have pictures of dragons and think about dragons and imagine what it would be like to be a dragon. I mean, it's not a simple thing. It's not like they're just a fan or they like it or they want to role play it. They feel this intense connection, and they feel completely like they're this and not human.
Which is often why transgendered individuals tend to grasp at... I've tried to explain this to people, too, because I've run into this. Grasp at fairly cliched and stereotypical gender aspects. Male to female transsexuals tend to dress very girly. And in fact, that is one of the identifying tricks I've been able to do to find some that I weren't aware, and then I figured it out based on mannerism and based on how they dress and things like that. They're often keys. Because, again, you feel more connected to this arbitrarily assigned social convention.
Yeah.
And so you grasp to it because you feel it matches your definition better.
But here's what's causing this. First of all, the gender binary is crap.
Absolutely.
It's a total cultural
construct. Pretty much any social dualism is crap, and they're all over the place. But the gender one is one of the
greatest. It's totally wrong. Nobody conforms to it. Nobody fits into it. Everybody has some level of problem with it. It's just some people can cope with it in a way that's more socially acceptable than others. And the people who can't cope with it at all end up on the fringes and margins. But they're no different than everybody else. Nobody fits into it. Nobody likes it. And everybody deals with it in some unhealthy way. It's just some unhealthy ways of dealing with it are more accepted than others. So that's one thing. But in a broader sense, for these people who don't feel human, okay, most of these people are in Western culture, and I would hasten to say a lot of them are in American culture, where humanity is defined in such narrow and really depraved terms when you think about it. I mean, human beings have to be competitive and individualistic, and, you know, you can have friends, but you have to be willing to stab that friend in the back for a raise or whatever. I mean, there's all kinds of ways that humans are portrayed in our culture that are so awful that who is human? Who wants to be that?
Yeah, and I mean, and any societal norm that has become hegemonic to a certain degree, people start to believe, oh, that's not society, that's humanity.
Yes, yes.
So
yes,
a lot of social conventions get attached to our species.
Right, right.
So if you don't like those social conventions, it must be that you're not.
But
the
reason,
which is a way out.
But the reason that happens is because that's what they're told. Do you understand?
It's human nature.
Yes,
there's
yes,
the phrase.
Yes,
it's
yes,
human
yes.
nature.
For example, the gender binary. How is that defended? Mm-hmm. Well, men, if you have a penis, this is how you're going to be.
And
if you
you're have gonna, a you're going to want to naturally sleep with as many women as possible.
Yeah, exactly, exactly.
Women are going to be nurturing.
And
men are going to compete for...
Right, and the same thing goes with when humans act badly. It's not said that there was some cultural or sociological reason behind it. It was biological.
Yep.
Human beings are just this way, and there's nothing we can do about it. So a person who doesn't feel like they're that
It does. Therefore must not be human. Therefore must not be human. Or that is an answer to...
Yeah, right. So this is something our culture is really horrible at, is we want to explain everything according to biology, like culture or sociology or psychology has nothing to do with it. And it's causing people to feel... And the gender binary, of course, is ridiculous. All that stuff mixed together is causing people to feel like, I don't relate to what everyone is telling me is human, or male or female or whatever. And I think it's very interesting. Well, and another phenomenon here is this, is the fact of the matter is, my research in the human mind indicates that there's lots of people in there in your head. And that's okay. And you can even have one person sort of drive the bus in your head and someone else drive it the next day, and that's okay. So sometimes I think people feel like they must be crazy to have all this stuff going on in there, and also they feel like, well, this person inside me that's not really a person but is a Muppet or a dragon or a unicorn or whatever, that I like to have that drive better than I like to have other things drive. And to me, that's a very normal psychological thing. It's not something that you have to turn into, well, I was a dragon in a past life kind of rationale, but I understand how that can develop given what our culture says about the human mind is the singular thing, and if you're sane, you have one mind, and it's always consistent from one moment to the next and from one age to the next, which is ridiculous. That's not how the human mind works, but that's what people are told, and they believe it.
Yeah.
So, you know, all of these problems, which aren't really problems, they're just ways of coping with it, and I think they're perfectly acceptable and fine, but then, of course, these people are on the margins of society, and they're criticized, and they're told they're crazy when they're not. This is just how they're coping with a culture that is really messed up when it comes to identity, not just gender identity, but even human identity.
This Alien Shore by, I forget her first, it's two initials, and Friedman is the last name of the author. It's called This Alien Shore. Touches on this. It's a sci-fi book, and there's a whole society based around this, and they've actually developed an elaborate caste system and marking system with face paint and things that allow you to communicate your psychological profile and therefore how you wish to interact with people. And it is non-permanent because there are certain individuals whose psychological makeup causes it to change from situation to situation.
I see. So you can paint your face differently.
Exactly. And on his heart, what it is dealing with, basically, it's a society in which various people have what are considered now mental illnesses. But those, you know, like forms of autism and things like that, often are just breakdowns in communication and how one processes things. Mm-hmm. And all of this is done in a way that people understand that it's a way of announcing that beforhand, and then there's etiquette built around, therefore we deal with this person this way because that's how they wish
that's
to be dealt
with.
I found it very fascinating. It's a very small part of a larger book, but we are so over time, it's not even funny.
All right, well, thank you, Anon, Brenda Lee, Mark, Lois, and Anon.
Yes, and we have no idea when we'll see you again, whenever they get tired.
Oh, yeah, on the other side, or lazy. Hey, but 10 bucks is 10 bucks.
10 bucks is 10 bucks. What is 10 bucks even actually worth over on our universe?
Please disregard the previous hour of useless audio. This has been a production of the Magical Talking Hat Podcast. If you would like to contact us, and I don't know why you would, please do so at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. All music is provided courtesy of Jay Underberg. More of his PodSafe audio can be found at podsafeaudio.com/J_Underberg. Thank you.